Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Jeff Potts, who is Senior VP Business Development and Lean Logistics. And today we're going to talk about preparing for a future with driverless trucks. Now, you know, driverless trucks is one of those areas in the supply chain logistics industry that certainly there's a lot of hype and buzz around, but at the same time, there's a lot of development around that. And there's a lot of questions about, you know, when will we see driverless trucks on the road, or even if, right? And then assuming that they will play a bigger role moving forward, what impact will that have on shippers, on carriers, on technology providers, and so forth? So it's my great pleasure to bring Jeff on the program, who's recently wrote a blog post about this, kind of sharing his thoughts and opinions on that. And I thought it'd be great to bring him on the program and kind of talk through that in terms of what he's seeing and hearing out in the industry about this topic. Just want to remind those of you that are joining us live today that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you've got a question for Jeff, you can do so via the Q&A button, and you can type it in. And certainly if it's a good and appropriate question, we have time, I'll try to weave it into the conversation. In order to ask a question, you do have to watch this episode on the Google Plus event page, which you can link to from the Talking Logistics page. So with that, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Adrian. It's great to be here today. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk about what's going on in the marketplace as it relates to autonomous vehicles.
Great, Jeff. And I can't believe that you haven't been on the program before after all this time. So it's certainly a pleasure to have you on. And you know, like I do with all my guests that are on for the first time, kind of before we dive into the topic at hand, why don't you tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics, and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Lean Logistics?
Sure. Yeah, I started in the business back in the early 80s. I came out of Michigan State in 1983 with a degree in logistics. And it's interesting, back in those days, a lot of people would ask you, what was logistics? And that was kind of a foreign term in the marketplace. And now you fast forward 30 plus years later, and it seems to be a fairly commonplace term thrown around. So I started out on the third-party logistics side of the business with a company called Total Logistic Control, which is now part of Ryder Systems. Spent 16 years there, both on the operations side of the business, both transportation, warehousing, brokerage, moved into logistics engineering, and ultimately into sales, commercial development, and leadership in the organization. And then in 1999, I had the great privilege to help start Lean Logistics with four other individuals in the marketplace. And last 17 years at Lean, we've been really focused on building a software as a service transportation management software platform. Today, we have roughly about $10 billion of freight flowing through that network, in excess of 19,000 carriers, 80,000 users come into the platform, whether they're customers or suppliers or carriers, on a daily basis to do their transport management. And as of June of this year, we're part of QL Systems. So we're part of a larger organization around supply chain solutions as well.
Great, great. Well, great career path there. Certainly, coming at it from the 3PL side, and then obviously, for all these years on the technology side, and certainly as an industry analyst, I've had the privilege as well in terms of watching the whole TMS market kind of develop, and Lean Logistics in particular over the last decade plus, if you will. And then obviously, like you just said, right now that the coming together of Lean with Kewell, and certainly looking forward to see how that develops moving forward. So let's talk now about, driverless trucks, or I think what the preferred term, at least from the Department of Transportation, is, autonomous, vehicles, because it really is kind of almost like a spectrum, if you will, of technologies that's involved with all of this. Like I said in my opening comments, there's a lot of buzz and hype around driverless trucks, but there is a lot of, developments that have taken place. And it seems like every day you pick up a newspaper or industry magazine, and you see some kind of new development that takes place. So, whether it's been on the technology front or even on the lobbying and regulatory front, I mean, how would you, kind of characterize the current state of driverless trucks? And, what have been some of the most, you know, interesting developments and accomplishments so far.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting how this has developed fairly rapidly over the last couple of years. You know, if you look at it today, there's eight states in the country, including Nevada, California, Michigan, Florida, North Dakota, Tennessee, Utah, and now Arizona, that are allowing the testing of self-driving vehicles on certain roadways. And so you're starting to see that taking place. In April of this past year, there was a lobbying group called the Self-Driving Coalition for Safer Streets that was formed. Volvo, Ford, Google, and ride-sharing giants such as Uber and Lyft formed the coalition. And they hired as their spokesman an individual by the name of Dave Strickland, who is was formerly chief of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And so there's a lot of activity going on to start to work on the government regulation side. In addition to that, a lot of what's happened so far has been around really new new vehicles, if you will, that would be autonomous vehicles. But in May of this year, there was an announcement of a new venture that was started, a company called Automato, and it's two former engineers and executives from Google who were heavily involved in the self-driving program there that formed a new company focused on really migrating this technology into existing transportation, commercial transportation in the marketplace. So retrofitting tractors that are already on the roads today with self-driving capabilities. And so that's, I think, a new kind of big breakthrough because of, you know, just the sheer amount of equipment that's out there that would be able to be retrofitted. And they're talking about costs of like $30,000 per piece of equipment to retrofit it and make it a self-driving vehicle.
Yeah, no, a lot of interesting things. I mean, I think even particularly, you know, that, that lobbying group that you kind of mentioned, I think is kind of interesting because I think there is going to be, you know, a lot of, you know, heavy lifting, if you will, that's going to be needed from a regulatory standpoint to move this forward. And we'll address that in a little bit as well. I think this startup that you talked about is also interesting. And I'll ask you a little bit later in terms of what you're hearing from the carrier side of things, you know, whether this is something that they're, you know, interested in and why. You know, one of the things that I also found interesting, I wonder if you kind of caught it as well. I saw that, you know, just a few weeks ago, there was over in Europe, there was an exhibition, if you will, around platooning, where a number of trucks, you know, did a platooning demonstration where they had, I think, something like seven or eight trucks in, you know, driving one behind each other. Only the one in front had a driver in it, but the ones behind it did not. And they kind of demonstrated the capabilities of platooning and driving across Europe and into, I think it was the Amsterdam, the port of the port there. You know, so I think that's another element of this where you've got the driverless vehicles themselves, but then you also have, well, how do you leverage them? And I think what I hear a lot around is this whole area of platooning being kind of an interesting implementation of driverless vehicles. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think platooning is a potentially a great way to start to get the autonomous or driverless vehicles in the marketplace because it's a bit of a step change. So you still have, as you mentioned, the driver in the front truck, if you will, leading the pack, and then you have the other trucks, if you will, following that driver truck in close proximity. And so there's a value of efficiencies around fuel consumption and drafting and that type of thing. Obviously, there's a cost reduction when you have you don't necessarily have to have a driver in every vehicle. But then it's also potentially a little bit a smaller leap for the government and the driving public to feel comfortable knowing that there's still a driver behind the wheel that can take control if something from a technology perspective happens and can still not have safety type of issues.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, when I think about platooning, I kind of think of it almost like the railroads, right? You've got this locomotive with the engineer in front of it, and you can have, you know, I was reading the Wall Street Journal, I think it was yesterday, you know, you've got, you know, there was some discussion around how many crew members should be as part of a freight train. You know, they're trying to, I think the standard is 2. It used to be 5 many years ago. It's down to 2. And there's discussion of, you know, can you even get to, you know, engineerless, you know, trains without any people in them, if you will, any engineers or conductors in them. But in some ways, you know, the platooning, it's almost like the equivalent of a freight train with cars, except on instead of rail lines, you're on the highways. You know, you touched upon this a little bit, you know, in terms of highlighting some of the benefits. I mean, but why is there, you know, why is there so much interest in driverless trucks today? I mean, is it just a technological novelty, or is there, you know, truly a compelling, you know, business case for them?
Yeah, I think what's really driving it today is, I think this is one of the most compelling, you know, economic business cases that you can have when you're bringing out new technology. I've been in the industry now for 30 plus years, and you know, there's been a driver shortage for as long as I can remember. There's also been you know, huge turnover problems in the driving workforce for a long, long time. I mean, if you look at the American Trucking Association in their 2015 report, they talked about, you know, the fact that there's 48,000 drivers in the industry from a shortage perspective. The average turnover across all trucking companies today in the driver workforce is over 90% turnover a year. And the driving workforce is aging. If you look at the median age of a driver today, it's 49 years old, compared to 42 years old for all other U.S. workers. And so I think it's an industry where, you know, we've been plagued with the shortages, we've been plagued with turnover. And then you start looking at equipment utilization. Because of the hours of service associated with trucks and drivers, and because of safety, obviously, you really only get, you know, 35 to 40% utilization of a tractor trailer under a single driver scenario when you're going over the road, because of the time that the driver has to take to rest. And as you think about equipment utilization and asset utilization, 35 to 40% is really pretty low. And so all of a sudden, if you can shift to a autonomous vehicle that can run, you know, 24/7/365 and start doing the math on it, it quickly becomes a situation where you could envision a future where the same amount of freight gets hauled with 40 to 50% less vehicles on the road. And all of a sudden you're creating driver jobs that are more local pickup and delivery type of driver jobs. And so it becomes a very compelling business case where you could see a decline in rates for shippers. You could see an increase in return on investment for carriers because of higher asset utilization. You could see a decline in trucks on the road and reduce the amount of congestion on our already overloaded highway infrastructure. So it's a pretty compelling case.
Yeah, you know, you raised a lot of great, you know, benefit buckets there, if you will. You know, this concept of, you know, a driverless truck. I mean, and the reason I mentioned earlier that I think the others prefer the term autonomous, you know, vehicle is because it doesn't necessarily imply that there won't be a driver in the cab, right? You know, there might be in some cases, or maybe that's the initial implementation where there will be a human in the cab, but they will be performing other tasks, right? Rather than just strictly, you know, driving and keeping their eyes on the road. You know, so there might be kind of, I would think maybe perhaps a transition period where, you know, initially, you know, it won't truly be driverless because there will be a driver there in the cab, but he or she may be doing some other tasks. Do you agree with that, or what's your thought in terms of the role of drivers moving forward as this technology continues to evolve and develop?
Yeah, I think the drivers, at least in the short run, will still be in the cab. So when we talked about truck platooning earlier, where you'd have a driver in the front vehicle with other vehicles following closely behind, I think you're going to see that kind of a situation, and I think you're also going to see it start in places where maybe an autonomous vehicle is a little bit easier to manage in a more controlled environment. So when you're on local secondary streets around big cities, that vehicle is being driven by a driver. But when you get that vehicle out onto an interstate system and you're moving the equipment and the load from exit to exit in that type of an environment, it may be more of an autonomous situation. Maybe the driver's still in the equipment in the truck, but you let the technology take over and drive the truck from exit to exit, and then the driver's really focused on the local pickup and the delivery side.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that one of the things I hear a lot around this is. I hear folks that are big proponents of driverless technology and kind of see that it's moving quickly and it's going to happen sooner than most people think. And then there's another camp of folks that are a little bit more skeptical about this and don't believe that we'll see driverless trucks anytime soon or even ever, right? And their comments are something along the lines of, gosh, if you look at Congress and states, I mean, we can't even get them to approve heavier trucks. How are we going to get them to approve driverless trucks roaming the streets? And the general public's already timid and afraid a little bit when they're kind of driving next to a big behemoth 53 foot long truck. It's just going to add more anxiety and more concerns about safety if they look into the cab and there's nobody in there, right? So I think that's arguably, I think there's some valid points raised in terms of, some of the hurdles that are out there. I mean, what do you see as some of the hurdles, the biggest hurdles to, driverless trucks, truly, making it out into the industry? And then what will it take to overcome those hurdles?
Yeah, I think you've hit on a couple of them. I think it is, getting the politicians and the government regulators comfortable that this new technology is safer than the current transportation model. And so I think that's going to take time for that to happen. But I also think that, as we talked about earlier, the fact that it's a pretty compelling business case of taking trucks off the road. And you could argue that if there's 40 to 50% less trucks on the road, that in and of itself creates a much safer environment as well, with fewer trucks for the consumer to have to maneuver around. And I think there's things that they can do to get the driving public more comfortable with the concept. They can potentially look at having designated lanes on highway systems that are either truck platooning or autonomous truck lanes only. And so the driving public that's driving cars are separated by the lanes as well. And as we talked about earlier, potentially restricting the autonomous or the platooning concept to interstate systems only, and as still having that driver in the front truck just as a precautionary way to make sure that we don't have failure of systems that cause horrible accidents to take place. So I think those are some of the things that can be done as we start to migrate into this new world of autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, and I think the group that you mentioned earlier and the type of people that are coming into this in terms of helping, with helping to educate the public and helping to work with the regulatory forces and the local and state and federal government to move the needle forward. I think those types of lobbying and education efforts, have to continue to, really overcome those hurdles. Let's go and talk about carriers now. You talked about kind of the retrofitting of existing, trucks with that startup auto coming to market. In your role, you get to speak, to a lot of carriers and work with a lot of carriers. I mean, what are you hearing from them, about driverless trucks? I mean, is this something that, they're generally pro for? Is it something that they're generally against? I mean, what do they see as the pros and cons of this?
Yeah, I think for the carrier side of the community, I see the carriers kind of falling into two camps. You have, I would say, maybe some of the more progressive carriers or early adopter kind of mindsets that are really cautiously optimistic that this technology is on the threshold of commercialization. And as soon as it's available, so to speak, that they would want to start trialing programs with autonomous vehicles or platooning of vehicles, because they recognize that, all of us recognize in the industry that, there's fundamental problems today that they just haven't been able to solve with turnover issues and hours of service and that type of thing. I think that's one camp, kind of the early adopters camp. The second camp is, I think there's other carriers that really feel that, this technology still may be a long ways off from a reality, that it's kind of almost Star Wars yet. And they're taking more of the mindset of, we'll start worrying about this and how we enfold it into our business once we start to see real evidence from other trucking companies that it works. So they'll be watching their peers, if you will, in the industry closely to see what the results that they're experiencing, and then try to adopt more quickly once they've seen what the pioneers have done.
Yeah, no, great point. I think I generally agree with that. I think what's interesting is that, when you kind of look at the fact that, the vast majority of the trucking industry here in the U.S. at least, and their owner operators, right, a guy and a gal and his or her truck, right? So, for a large percentage of carriers, I mean, this is basically their livelihood from one perspective, right? Or from another perspective is to say, hey, if I can implement this technology, maybe I going back to the comment that we talked about earlier, I can still be a carrier. I can still be a quote unquote driver, but I won't be driving. I will be performing other value added tasks on behalf of my customers, or, spending the time that I'm in the cab differently than I am spending it, today. So I think there might be this initial resistance to it from perhaps owner operators to say, well, this is my livelihood, right? So it's me and my truck, and now you're taking me out of the equation. But I think if you look at it as, well, I'm not necessarily taking you out of the equation, we're taking what you do currently today and changing it in the future. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, if you look at what they're doing today versus what they're doing in the future, I think you're removing some of the mundane task of having to operate that vehicle and give them the opportunity to focus on other types of tasks. The reality is there's not a lot of people that want to drive cross country for a living anymore. And that's why you have issues of driver shortages and driver turnover. And so all of a sudden you have the opportunity from taking what is a long haul job and turning it into a local driving job, where maybe they're more focused on catching and releasing trucks off the interstate systems in local markets, where now I'm a driver and I can be home with my family every night, and I can work 8 hours a day in my local community driving local pickup and delivery, but I don't have to be gone for days or weeks at a time doing the over-the-road job. And so I think the quality of life for the driver in the future is going to be much improved over what it is today.
Yeah, no, great points. I agree. I think that's going to be part of the equation here in terms of, I think what you kind of alluded to is almost a rethinking the way these transportation networks are managed, you know, today. Let's assume there is a future, you know, with driverless truck. What impact, will it have on transportation management systems and, from a technology standpoint, right? I mean, what new capability or functionality must TMS solutions have to, you know, align themselves with an operating reality where there are driverless trucks?
Right. Yeah, I think some of the things as we start thinking about, you know, our core business of TMS solutions is, some of the constraints that you've built around optimization will have to be rethought. So for example, today, because of hours of service regulations and highway speeds and that type of thing, a typical driver can travel about 500 miles per day. And so when you're doing your load building and your optimization, you know, those are some of the constraints that you build into your algorithms. In the future, I think those algorithms could get more complex because now you could envision if you're moving a load from point A to point B, there's a portion of that load where it might be a driver involved in the truck doing the local pickup or delivery on a secondary road, so that 500 miles a day may still apply. But then you have another portion of the move that's on the interstate system where now an autonomous vehicle could be running 24/7 and you could have, 1,000 miles a day as a constraint. And so as you're starting to think about optimization constraints, you'd have to think about what are the roads that vehicle will travel over? What are the ability for you to travel? How many miles can you travel in a day's time on those roads? And that will have to go into your algorithms as you build your optimization. I think another area that potentially you're going to see a change is there's going to be a need for, I think, a very tight integration into telematics. I mean, certainly that's part of TMS systems today, but in today's world, the driver is still in the truck. In the future, the driver may not be in the truck, and so you have to have a very tight telematics between the TMS system and the actual physical equipment, because if you need to reroute a truck that's going down the interstate system without a driver involved, how does that work in the future in terms of relaying that message to the equipment so that it can get rerouted to another destination? And also on the trailer side, very tight telematics into the trailer, because today the driver is involved, so to speak, in the care and custody of the load that he or she is hauling. In the future, if there's no driver in the truck, how do you make sure that the care and custody of what's being hauled is there, and having tight telematics into what's going on inside the trailer while that vehicle is traveling across the country will be important for TMS systems to be able to capture and relay that type of information.
Yeah, great points. I hadn't thought about the telematics piece, and you're right. Even though telematics is playing an important role today in TMS, you know, the importance is only going to increase moving forward, for the reasons you cited there. We're running short on time here, so I've got just a couple of more questions. I just want to remind those of you that are joining us live that if you do have a question for Jeff, and you are on the Google Plus event page, if you want to ask a question, you can do. You should do so now as we try to wrap up here. So let's now kind of looking forward. How do you see the development of and the adoption of driverless trucks, evolving over the next few years?
I think the big hurdle, as we talked about earlier, is the government regulations side of it. So assuming that we are able to get through the regulatory issues, I think the commercialization of these types of technologies could be starting to roll out relatively quickly in the marketplace. So, I think we need to start thinking about as a supply chain community, what are the impacts of this and how do we prepare for this technology to potentially be mainstreamed in the next 5 years. And I don't think that's, out of the question at this point in time that this technology could be mainstreamed in the next 5 years.
Yeah. So, absolutely. I definitely agree with that, particularly on the regulatory front and the work that needs to be the work that needs to be done there. Which, you know, kind of leads me to my last question here, which is, you know, as a way to wrap up, I mean, what should, you know, everyone in the ecosystem, right? Shippers, carriers, 3PLs, obviously technology providers, and others in the industry do today, you know, to prepare for a potential future with driverless trucks?
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that's interesting to me and I think supply chain professionals to really start looking at is how does potentially this technology impact distribution networks. So if you think about today, for a lot of organizations, you know, just using the United States as an example, you know, many companies are operating under, you know, a 4 or 5 distribution center model, where they might have DCs in Southern California or possibly Nevada, Pacific Northwest, you know, Dallas, Chicago, Atlanta, somewhere in the Northeast. And they look at these networks as, you know, how do I service my existing customer base with 1 to 2 day transit times? But that's based on, you know, hours of service and travel distance and that type of thing. In the future, you could potentially get the entire country covered under a 2 DC model if you could go from 500 miles a day to 1,000 miles a day. So how does that change my distribution patterns? How does that change where I might have locations for distribution centers? And what does that do to kind of the real estate development? And what does that do for 3PLs who are running big box warehouses in markets today? You know, I think that could be, certainly areas that I would focus. If I was on the carrier side, you know, I would start thinking about if I don't have to hire over-the-road drivers, and my network is going to go more to hiring drivers to do local pickup and delivery work, well, where should those drivers be located? And, you know, what are the major markets where freight is coming into and out of? And so how do I potentially redesign my transportation network to accommodate these types of technologies? So I think there's a lot of re-engineering, if you will, that could go into supply chains as this technology becomes more mainstream out there in the marketplace.
Yeah, those are all great points. I mean, I think, you know, my main takeaway from what you said there is really the, you know, companies, whether they're shippers, carriers, 3PLs, should really kind of take a model and simulate what, you know, the environment might look like in the future. That way they have already done this analysis ahead of time, if you will, and can weigh the different constraints or the different pros and cons and different designs that they may want to evolve toward as this technology continues to evolve and potentially gets adopted in greater force moving forward. So I view it, you know, almost like you would with any kind of what if question, right? What if there's a port strike? What if there is some weather event? What if our demand increases by twice than what we predicted, right? So here's another what if question to model and simulate and really think through the different possible impacts and solutions that you may want to put in place in response to this future potential reality. And I think if you do that homework now and that thought exercise now, you'll obviously be in a better position to exploit the opportunity or evolve your operations toward this new operating reality than if you kind of just wait till after the fact and then kind of trying to figure things out afterwards.
Right. No, absolutely.
Well, Jeff, like I always say at the end of all our episodes, we always manage to scratch the surface on this topic, but I think we covered a lot of ground today and certainly, you know, provided some, great food for thought for those, listening today. So thank you very much for making the time to be with us today.
All right. Thank you, Adrian. It's great talking with you, and it'll be fun to see where all of this evolves over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. And I want to thank those of you that joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand and you've got a question for Jeff, you can watch this episode on talkinglogistics.com. And post a question or comment there for Jeff, and I'm sure that he will be more than happy to respond via that medium. So again, thank you all for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.